All right, man. Happy Hallows Eve, Eve. Whatever. What is this? The day before the Halloween? I don't know. We're
It's the
not.
day before. I'm about to celebrate the time change. I don't know what you're celebrating in your crazy world of witches and witchcraft, but.
The fall solstice. All right, great. Well, that's a waste of 20 seconds.
Good start.
Yeah,
Good
right.
start.
Welcome to the Bass and Treble Podcast. My name is Neil.
Now I'm Steve.
Yes, you are. And this week's album is Gorillaz by Gorillaz. That's
That
really
that's what you call eponymous.
what hippopotamus? Hippopotamus?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about gorillas, and we're gonna talk about some rock chicks of the 70s, and then we're gonna talk about the suckiest song by the awesomest band ever. So it's a little bit of a dichotomy there, if that's the right word.
Man, Steve, it's too late for you to be using these big words, but I'll try to keep up. So if you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. Plus, you can follow us on Twitter at Bass Treble Pod. Like us on Facebook, Bass and Treble Podcast, for more daily content.
That's right. So, all right, so we just said this week's album, let's jump right in, is Gorillaz by Gorillaz. And this is one that you chose. And I totally see why. It's an awesome album. But I want to hear it from your own words. What do you like about this album? Like, why do you think it's worthy enough to be album of the week?
It's the first album from this band called the Gorillaz that was my hey, music doesn't suck so much in the year 2001 band. I was 15 when this came out. I think I was like
That's a lot
15.
of music that did suck in 2001, but this
Oh,
one kind of stood out.
so much of it. Holla back, youngin'. So yeah, there was a lot of bad music, and no, I was really turned on this album, and I wanted to kind of break from the norm and wanted to go into a couple new avenues. And maybe people that know about the Gorillaz that like the Gorillaz, we can go over this pretty cool breakthrough album. They were doing some pretty funky stuff, so let's go over the members of the Gorillaz real quick.
There's the gorillas, and then there's the guys behind the gorillas. Like, the gorillas is an animated
Which one should
band.
we do first? I mean, does it make us look like dummies if we start talking about fake people first, or is that really the
No, because
band?
if you really boil it down, like, when you think about the gorillas, it is these four guys, even though they might be animated monkey type characters. They are the gorillas. And then, you know, don't pay any attention to the men behind the curtain.
That's right.
It's, yeah, these four guys who were introduced in their first music video. There's 2D, which I think is kind of creative considering they're animated. There's Murdoch, who plays bass. There's Russell on percussion, who gets a lot of shout-outs in these songs, it seems. They're talking more about Russell than anyone else. And then there's Noodle, not to be confused with Noodles from The Offspring, but just Noodle,
Right,
who's on
singular.
lead guitar. Right.
This is before Rock Band. This is before there were animated dudes playing music. I kind of want to say that it might have influenced Rock Band a little bit when it comes to having animated people play music. Maybe we wouldn't have Rock Band if it wasn't for the Gorillaz. Just throwing that out there.
Well, now that you mention that, how many other animated rock bands or, you know, not real rock bands were there?
None.
Would you consider Josie and the Pussycats an actual band?
I thought that was a movie. That's an actual band. I thought
All right,
that
maybe
came
I'm
out of a movie.
No, maybe I'm showing my age here a little bit. Even before it was a movie, they were a Saturday morning cartoon band.
Really?
Yeah, Josie was like, I mean, I think she was the lead singer and guitarist for this animated band back in the day, and the Pussycats were her band. So, I mean, they had music and stuff, and
Did they have like full songs they played, or was it just like just like really crappy backing tracks, or would they play actual songs in the morning cartoon?
no, I could be wrong about this, but I think they actually really had like albums and stuff.
Wow,
It was like a legit band.
that's something worth researching before the podcast, Steve, because at this point I want to say that shit does not count. I think Josie and her Pussycats were a little bit like I don't know. I mean, maybe they are the first and only other.
Oh, I have another example for you for other animated bands that came around before the Gorillaz. How can we forget Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Moving on. So let's talk about the real members of the Gorillaz, because that's some pretty cool stuff. Damon, God, how do you say his last name?
Damon Albarn.
Albarn. Okay. Not sure where that's from. And he is the lead singer of Blur, which everybody would know as the band with that song called Song 2, otherwise known as Woohoo!
Woohoo!
It was like the Starship Troopers theme song, right? That was like in Starship Troopers, right? That song was on the soundtrack of Starship Troopers. Anyways, the guy for Blur, which I don't know how that and Blur-style music at all syncs in with Gorillaz, but...
No, I think it doesn't. I think it was a chance for him to escape his usual rigmarole and dive into a new project with some new people and change up the style a little bit. So I can see that Blur and Gorillaz are similar in the way that, you know, it's still the same guy, but I think it's a departure of from what he's used to.
I honor that whole vibe. I think that's I commend him for doing that. I think Blur was like direct competition with Oasis, from what I researched. Like, they were kind of like, so when you think of Oasis and Gorillaz, I don't think you could pick two more polar opposite style musical acts. I mean,
it's like the British invasion of the 90s all over again.
Yeah. I always get upset every time I hear Champagne Supernova, because they should have just titled Champagne Supernova, because that guy's accent's so thick. Supernova. Okay.
Damon, you know, is one of the two guys behind the Gorillaz. The other guy is Jamie Hewlett, who is the main force behind Tank Girl. Tank Girl is a little bit more underground, I guess. Tank Girl came up also out of the UK in the 90s, and it was originally a comic book that was turned into a movie and had a big kind of world behind it that a lot of people were into. He is the other half of Gorillaz behind the scenes.
So he's the guy that kind of does all the animative artistic work for the band. What I don't think he played a part in was in the actual music, but it seems like he has other experience with British bands and doing artwork for them.
He is a comic book artist and designer. He was co-creator of Tank Girl and co-creator of Gorillaz, but you're right, nothing
of
has
music.
Anything to do with music.
Nice. And so the Gorillaz, they won some awards, right, back in the day. Some music video awards, namely for Clint Eastwood, which we'll talk about a little more in a second. They won some Brit Awards, also for Clint Eastwood. And they got nominated for Best Album, and man, they did really good back in 2001. They got a bunch of neat things. Even they even got a Grammy Award nomination.
Yeah, nomination for Best Rap Duo. And the Grammys again in 2003, they were nominated for Best Long Form Music Video.
Long Form Music Video, that sounds like something that someone like really puts a lot of time and effort into, right? Celebrity Takedown, I've never seen that.
It goes beyond just the music video, it actually tells a story and stuff. It's kind of like Thriller, I think, was one of the first long form music videos. Unless you count like the Beatles.
It's so funny that you mentioned Thriller, because I watched that video recently, like on YouTube, for no reason. I don't know why the hell it was.
Because it's entertaining.
No, I didn't even mean to. It was like I butt dialed Michael Jackson on my YouTube channel. Like, I don't even know.
And you're like, hey, now that I'm into it, I'll stick with it.
Well, in the beginning, there's like a disclaimer that's like, you know, based on my spiritual beliefs, I just want to note that I do not, this video, no way means that I believe in the occult. And I'm like, what? I was like, I never realized there's a disclaimer in the beginning of the video. It's like, chill out, Michael. Chill out, okay? Go, just calm down. We're going to switch it up this week a little bit. Before, we would just kind of talk a lot about the album, and I think it's fun to... Let's just go track by track. Let's talk about these songs that I really, really like.
I think we could do that with this album because it is such a good album. Each one of these tracks has its own personality, has its own style. So, yeah, let's break it down.
So the first one, Rehash, Steve, what do you think of that song?
It sets up the album. This album is full of funky grooves, and it's a good mix between rock and rap, and even, can I throw the word ambient out there?
Sure.
Some of these grooves are awesome to have on in the background, just as you're, you know, having friends over, or a lot of these songs get into a groove.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rehash starts out this album on exactly that note.
First time I heard this album, it made me think of Beck a little bit with that kind of intro. I feel like this, yes. Maybe this guy's like a big Beck fan and he's trying to do that kind of thing. It's got a super sweet like bassline groove and really simple lyrics. I looked up the song title a little bit because I'm like, Rehash, what's that all about? It sounds like it might be a shout out to Good Hashish, or like having money to buy it. There's a whole hook in there. It's like
everything is drug related.
there's a couple of tracks of this album that kind of shout out drug-related things, and I don't know if that's just on purpose or not. I think when they made when this album came out, if you look at the cover, they're all in like a Jeep, a camo Jeep that has a G instead of a J, and it's very, very big. The explicit lyrics is like totally like bolded out. I feel like they were targeting people in my age group to be like, listen to this, we're so cool at 14 or 15. But it could be a joke as well about the record industry, is another theory I had.
Wow, you're getting deep with all these theories.
Well, they keep saying it's the money or stop, and it keeps making me think that maybe they're saying, like, either we make money off of this or we'll stop. Like, either it's going to be money or we're done. But either way, I think it's a really cool kind of electro rock song with all the guitars and stuff, and it really sets up the album nicely. Like, you know, moving forward, you're right. It's a good...
On another hand, it's the money or stop could be another reference to drugs. The dealer's like, hey, man, pay up or you're not getting any more drugs.
Yeah, it's probably just a drug song. I just don't want to think that. I don't want to make it so dark.
All right.
It's a poppy song, though. It's very...
So how about Corporate Greed instead?
Yeah. Not as dark, right? The next song, 5-4, which is a time signature, which too many bands do that.
This is one of my favorite songs on the album just for that reason alone. Like, I'm a big fan of any kind of music that has awkward or strange time signatures. I like tapping my feet along with it and counting along with it. And the name of the song is 5-4, and it didn't even occur to me until one day I was listening to it, and I'm like, oh wait, it's in 5-4 time signature. It's really syncopated in a way that keeps me hooked every single time.
Yeah, and I thought like it broke away from 5-4 at some point in the song, and then when I listened to it, I'm like, no, it really doesn't. The whole song is 5-4.
It's true all the way through.
It's pretty neat, and they sneak it in there. I'm so dumb that I'm listening to it, and I'm like, oh, this is 5-8. And then I'm like, I'm an idiot. 5-8, 5-4 is just like fractions work the same way because 5-8 times 2, 10/8. Anyways, enough math. But yeah, it's really hard to get a popular or a song that people want to listen to that have off rhythms, especially 5-4, which is like so weird. But I think it's layered really well. The build up is cool, like with the synth sound. The lyrics, they 2D's character. Switches it up in a way where it's really, really subtle, but really cool. Because there's like a juxtaposition in there that I noticed right off rip that it goes, and let me tell myself. The first couple times he says, and let me tell myself. And then later when he breaks it down, he says, she made me kill myself. It's such a cool trick, you know, to get people to like pay attention to what's happening. Yeah, I love it. I do think it's kind of at the ending it was kind of a cock block, because it's like a build up and then the build up just kind of dies. Like I want to have, I always picture there being another little breakdown or something, and instead it just builds up and then ends, and I'm like, oh, I was like,
you just want to keep it going for a little bit longer.
Yeah, like there's probably a cool remix of this song that's like 12 minutes long. It's totally like my style, like just keep it going. She told me
Yep, and yeah, I think there are certain parts of Paranoid Android by Radiohead, which are also in 5-4. And of course, Tool has some songs that are in 5-4 because Tool can't keep a 4-4 beat for anything.
Sean, my bass player, used to make a joke about the Tool's drummer throws 2 darts at a dartboard and then they decide that that's the time signature.
That totally makes sense. I can see that.
Yeah, they're pretty wild. And so after 5-4, you get into this Tomorrow Comes Today. What can I say about this song? There's a breakbeat, whistling, harmonica, and you've got some super like smooth lyrics that I think is really the intro into like the Gorillaz world. Like I feel like Rehash and 5-4 are more like, hey, we're starting off songs, and then this one kind of really presents the digital performers well.
Yep, I agree. You're right. At this point in the album, we're kind of in the groove of it. Mm-hmm. The intro's over. They're kind of throwing everything they got at us. They're giving us a nice little introduction of who the Gorillaz are. And, sharing their world with us.
Yeah, man, the digital won't let you go. I think that's a cool shout out for a bunch of, like, digital animated guys. And this is, like, back when... I think the timing of this is really neat because it was, like... CGI-based characters, like, you know, Josie and the Pussycats was, like, hand-drawn stuff, right? Like, it was, like, regular animation, and these dudes were, like, computerized, droidish, British droidish dudes, which I was all about. So...
British droidish.
So the next song, New Genius, Brother, is kind of that next Doom track, I would say, like the next Doomy track.
It is kind of spooky, eerie, a little bit lower key, maybe in a minor chord. I'm not too sure about that.
It's an electronic Western song. I think everything in this album, no, not everything, but yeah, definitely in a minor chord. After Tomorrow Comes Today, everything is kind of dark. And this song has a really neat message. I'm going to read one of the lyrics here. Like, brother, sister, too, do what you must do. Don't trust people you meet. They might promise you that the river ain't deep. It's like, this could have been the Kill Bill soundtrack. Like a freaking...
That's an excellent call. You're right. With the whistling in there, and it does have a modern Western feel to it. And it would fit right in on Kill Bill.
Yeah, it's got a lot of cool bassline stuff going on in there. Slow and fast. It's a jam. Jam, yep. Jam.
The next song is the one that everyone knows. This is their biggest hit. This was one of the best songs of 2001. This song for a lot of people brings them back to the days 14 years ago, wherever they were. You could not escape this song at the time.
Yeah,
Clint Eastwood.
It was a summer hit, 2001. That's when I heard it. My personal story is that I didn't hear this song on the radio first. I saw the debut of the music video on MTV, and I want to.
You were. There when history happened.
Like, literally when they were like, this is a brand new song. And then I remember I was at my best friend Hunter's house, as I was a lot in the summer of 2001. And we were like, those are cartoons. Is that a band of cartoons? I was just like, we were both just like, what? And I know it sounds silly, but at the time it was kind of revolutionary to us to have like characters be the band members instead of like actual people and having it sound like rock, you know, rocky music.
Right. And this song also includes Del the Hunk, the funky Homo sapien.
I love that that's his name.
Yeah, it's a great stage name. I don't know if his mom gave him that name, but this guy is as funky as his namesake implies. Like, he carries the groove on the lyrics here.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a catchy rhythm, and the lyrics are singable. Everybody can remember them. And I think any other hit song by Gorillaz, you know, including like Feel Good Inc., this is kind of like the mold for their hit songs, I guess, going forward. And I'd say the rap lyrics in it are kind of corny, and there's a cartoon monkey, but it's 2001, man. We were living it up.
Cartoon gorilla, dude. Get it straight. But yeah, this is the first time I had heard about Del the Funky Homo Sapien before. He had a few songs on his own.
Yeah.
But this really introduces everyone to how smooth his words are, you know, completely legible hip-hop lyrics, and at the same time saying something that sounds kind of deep.
And yeah, I mean, I was in a band playing, and we used to cover this song. This song has three whole notes in it. It's a neat track. So yeah, that was the Jammy Jam, and totally takes me back. You see with your eyes, I see destruction and demise, corruption in the skies from this fucking enterprise. Now I'm sucked into your lies through rust, so not in muscles, but percussion to provide for me as a guide. Y'all can see me now because you don't see with your eye, you perceive with your mind. So the next song, Man Research, Clapper.
Yeah, so I've listened to this album, you know, a few times in preparation for this podcast, and this song doesn't even ring a bell. This song does not stick at all.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Tootie's voice in this song at all. It's kind of annoying, but the bass line is really good. And I think at this point, they're just jamming more than anything else in the album. Like, it's kind of breaking away from what they're doing. I mean, they talk about killing a model at their door. It just sounds like an Insane Asylum song, and it's just a lot of electro and less rock. So, you know, it's decent, and it's got some cool bird and drum sounds, but it's all over the place. Like, I think it's more experimental, and I guess being track six in the album kind of gave them some leeway to be like, let's try some crazy stuff and see if it sticks.
All right.
And then the next song, Punk, was like right there with it. I don't shit. Like, what is going on?
No, I mean, it's accurate. It's kind of like pseudo-punk. It's like if Gorillaz wanted to try out something with punk, all the pieces are there for a punk song, you know, like that,
right?
That British accent kind of, and the fast talking, and like you said, with the
clapping.
Kind of like... Yeah, all the pieces are there, but for some reason it still doesn't feel like real punk. It feels like Gorillaz punk, which I guess is kind of what they were going for.
Yeah, it was, but like, an industrial sounding punk. It had a lot of like weird sound effects, and it's only like a minute and like change. I think it's like a minute 45 tracks. It's really quick, just kind of in and out.
Like a good punk song should be. They're just get in, get out, and rock your world for a
minute.
Hey
man, don't tell the Clash that. They make some super long, like crazy long punk rock songs. Those are the ones that aren't
play by their own rules.
I like the ones that are shorter from them, though. And then the next track, why don't you introduce this one, Steve? Because I know you love the way this one sounds.
This is the worst song in the album, to be honest. I feel like I'm bashing an album that I actually really love. I feel like I'm talking down a lot about it a lot. I love this album
right.
A lot, except this one song called Soundcheck, Gravity. Yeah, that's exactly the part that I hate about it. So this is almost like three songs in one, where it starts out with this dude. It's like noise in the background. That's why they call it Soundcheck. It's just like noise, and the dude is like just blabbering nonsense into the microphone, just like sounds like a three-year-old who found his first megaphone and he's just shouting to hear his own voice. It starts out horrible, and then about a minute or two into the song it kind of finds its groove, and actually this part of the song is amazing,
right?
If they would have just cut out that stupid sound check part and go right into the jam, it would be amazing.
Yeah,
it's got this funky soothing bass line, super groovy. And then it ends up again with right the way it started. Just this guy shouting into a megaphone, sounding like a moron.
I think Punk definitely is the worst song in this album. I actually like this song because it's reggae, man. It's some good reggae. And it's just, why not? Like, why not just throw a reggae song in there? And they play some super weird, like, diminished piano chords. It's just like a music geek song for me. And it just sounds like a ball to play, and I wouldn't be surprised if they played this live, whatever, anytime they played live, because it sounds like a total, like, live band song.
And, well, they should get the sound check part out of the way at the sound check, as to not offend anyone else who's listening.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree that if you just took the bass line in it and put it on a loop, I would just dance to it the whole time. This song is so 2001, the DJ scratches and everything. I think it has some good transitions, though, and I think that solo voice is kind of there for a reason. Maybe not in the beginning, but later on when they do it and it's got some like light guitar behind it and they build it up kind of like a Puff Daddy back then, like kind of victory type of build up. But yeah, the beginning, it does definitely kind of, it's definitely going in dry, no lube for him to just be like, heaven, yeah. You're like, what the fuck is, come on.
Can't stand yeah. it. Even just you imitating it just is like nailed on a chalkboard.
They do some cool stuff here though. It's like Massive Attack beat combined with a Moby vocal break kind of a thing, almost.
See, it even feels like we're talking about two different songs here.
Yeah, and I like it though. I just do.
Yeah, once the groove hits, it's a great song.
It's got some cool stuff, the bass line and stuff. But yeah, you should edit your own collection and just take out the first like 30 seconds and just go right into the bass line.
I just might do that. Great idea. So moving on from there, we have a song called Double Bass. And if you couldn't guess, it has a double bass line.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no vocals on this track. It's just an instrumental.
Yeah, instrumentals. But
yeah, it's awesome. You just get that double bass feel. There's so much bass to this song. And yeah, it keeps that groove going. At this point, you know, we're in the thick of the album. This is the part where it seems like it's good to have on in the background. It's good ambient. It's
this is video game music, man. I played like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater to this. I specifically remember playing like Pro Skater and having this in the background. It's just a cool song. It goes like between keys and stuff. It's got a bunch of like weird transitions. And in the middle of it, some British guy says, "All of which makes me anxious, at times unbearably so." And then it goes back into the groove, which I think is really funny.
I didn't realize I had any lyrics at all.
Yeah, like right in the middle of the guy's like, "All of which makes me anxious, at times unbearably so." There's like two beat and it's like boop 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 right back into it. You're like, what?
So British.
Yeah. Rock the House. That's a jam.
This next track brings it back to life. It cranks it up a bit.
There's a lyric in there where like the third thing he says is like, "Just shake your ass crack."
That's right. This is the track where Del the Funky Homo Sapien comes back.
Yep.
And spits some really creative lyrical flow here.
It steps Del's game up from Clint Eastwood a bit. Like he totally gets into like a real rap flow here where it's not like just a couple one-liners. I love it. I love the hook. Like, "How many ready rock the house?" It's very 90s, you know, hip hop, early 90s hip hop influence with that kind of call out. I love this song. My man, I'm highly animated, even though I'm decomposing. So if your feet is frozen, I'ma die to see you open. See rhyme and the DJ spin. I want y'all to just get down. Now while the MC rhyming and the DJ cutting, I want y'all to just get down. And when the MC rhyme and the DJ spin, I want y'all to just get down.
So what's up next? What's the track after that?
19-2000, which used to blow my mind. I'm like, what's going on? This is like a Y2K reference. I don't know how the heck they came up with that. But yeah, this is my second favorite song on the whole album. Just carefree lyrics. It's just like crazy bubble pop transition stuff. And there's just nothing stopping the song from making me happy and excited. It's just like, get the new shoe shine, man. It's just so catchy. And I only wish the female vocalist was in more of the songs and not just in one of them.
Oh, is that a separate vocalist?
Yeah, the girl who says like, get the new shoe shine. I don't know who she is or from where.
That makes a lot of sense because to me it sounds like a little kid. Like they just brought a little kid up on stage and they're like, "Here you go. Sing a few of these songs." It sounds like a kid's song.
Did you ever go through a drive-thru and order something and they're like, "Okay, ma'am." Like when you were just learning how to drive. Oh, no, because you have...
No, I don't think I had that problem.
Well, some of us who don't have deep baritone voices like Steve, like when I used to be 14 years old or 15 years old, or I was like driving illegally, so I'm just giving away. But
when I was driving a car at 14 years old through a drive-thru.
When I was 12 driving a stolen car to the Kofi Burger King, they used to be like, okay, ma'am, right away. I used to get so discouraged. No, but seriously, when I was 15 or 16, they'd be like, anything else, ma'am? And I'd be like, what's wrong with my voice?
Well, 19-2000 pulls it off really well. I mean, it sounds like a song for kids. When I have kids, eventually someday, I'll play this song for them and it will be their favorite.
Like I keep saying with Roxy, I'm going to play all this music and stuff, and then undoubtedly it turns into like, we're on the way to...
Nirvana and Soundgarden?
No, no.
Here you go, Roxy. Here's some grunge. Yeah.
Here, Roxy. Here's some Green Day. She's like, ah! I put on We're on the Way to Grandpa's Farm. I'm like, you know, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. So
here you go. Have some Bob Dylan. You could really appreciate it at 3 years old.
Yep. Yeah. Do you understand the themes? Do you understand the kind of life that Bob Dylan is just looking at me like, snack? Snack? Yes.
Okay. Well, you still got some time.
Yep, for sure.
All right, so what's the next song after this?
Latin Simone, otherwise called ¿Qué pasa contigo?, which means in Spanish, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? Why did I put it like that? It's like so New Yorker. What's the matter with you, eh? This style of music that's in the background is what's called son. It's a Cuban style of music, which is really neat. It's even got a Latin style bass. It's probably a fretless electric, man. It's totally doing the little... whoop whoop whoop, all that. I mean, it's this is like just a Cuban track that they threw in here. I don't even know what to think.
It seems like they just went 100% full force into Latin.
Yeah,
it's got the word Latin in there. Simone is a Latin name. Que pasa contigo is Spanish words,
right? The whole,
and they even got the music to back it up.
The thing I love about this album is that it's really selling you the Gorillaz world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not forced at all. Like, it's very much...
Right, it's diverse enough where they can throw a punk song back-to-back with this song that sounds like it's for kids back-to-back with something in Spanish.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it is a unified theme. It's got these funky grooves that just keep you going through it.
I even took the time to kind of break down a little bit what the song's about. And it talks about leaving negative people and moving on with your life. Like, there's a whole, the lyric section translated in there, it talks about illuminate your life, your love, and it's super cool. So it's got a really good message, actually, in Spanish, talking about just, like, leave them alone, like, just get away, like, don't let the negative people bring you down.
I kind of like that. It's a good life lesson for everyone to learn.
Yep. The next song, Steve.
The third to last track here is Starshine.
Yep.
It's we're kind of starting to fade out on the album here. It's got a good chill background vibe.
I think they're just trying to fill in time by this point.
Yeah, the vibe is good and the beat is okay. For me, it's the vocals that ruin it. Again, he comes in with these scratchy. It's almost like Gravity again. He's got this scratchy. Nails on a chalkboard.
We were talking
voice.
About this. I don't think that's Dave Albarn's voice. I think he purposely makes himself sound like a douche for this album, trying to make it different.
Why would anyone make themselves sound horrible?
I don't know. I mean, Geddy Lee sounds the way he does naturally, so God forbid. But
poor guy.
I know. I just, by the end of this song, the bass synth they've got going on reminds me of Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time. Like, not even kidding. Like, at the end of it, there's so many little, like, ba-ba, ba-ba, ba-ba-ba. I'm like, no, I'm not a fan of this song at all.
Moving on from there, the next track is Slow Country.
I want to hear what you have to say about Slow Country, because we talked
I was going through the album, listening to it, and I started to realize how hard it is for bands to fit a honk honk noise into their songs.
Honk honk.
I can think of some Beach Boys songs. I know it shows up in Pet Sounds. But here in this Slow Country song, it sounds like you're just squeezing a clown's nose for 4 minutes.
it's reggae singing with that weird honking noise and some kind of stadium noise. It's just, it's way too experimental.
And you know what, somehow they still pull it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the song. It's kind of fun.
It's got some really awesome, all these songs have really smooth bass playing lines over it. And I thought the singing in this song was awesome. Like, the actual singing is pretty good. So I'll excuse
it. I think that's why I like it. Those bass grooves is really what carries it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the honks, they're not all the time, but definitely way too many of them. Like, it's like when
it's enough where it's noticeable.
Well, when you mentioned it to me and then I started listening to it, when it stopped, I had like a moment of relief, like, oh. And then it comes back, I'm like, oh, there it is again. There it is again. It's the first part.
Yep. Not life, and try it up a lot,
you won't get money. Yeah.
And then the album itself wraps up with M1A1.
Yeah, the song is freaking awesome to me. It starts off as a horror movie scene and driving guitar and bass. It's just great. It's got an awesome breakbeat. It's just totally grooving over some punky lyrics, and it sounds like an Irish drinking song to me. I think it's a
sounds
really
like
cool
a
song.
Driving song to me. Mm-hmm. It's great to like just get behind the wheel and have a driving beat like this. Starts out kind of creepy.
Yeah, this song has a guitar solo. It's the only song they have with this guitar solo at the end, and I just want to say a good way to cap off an album.
Yes.
Dude, like, you know, good way to end it off. From start to finish, there's very little filler songs. There's really a lot of good grooves.
But it is there. There are a few, like, generally speaking, I love the album. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of really good, amazing stuff in here. But once in a while, something comes around that is jarring, just enough to, like, throw me off a little bit. What I really like about this album is great to have on in the background. Got a lot of bunch of ambient grooves that just kind of, like, keep the flow going on in a room. But once in a while, something happens that kind of brings it back front and center. It ruins that go with the flow kind of vibe, and maybe that's what they were looking for. They want to keep themselves, you know, relevant. They want to remind you that they're there.
I think Moby came out with Play in 1999. They came out with this in 2001, and this kind of is a more broken up version of like Moby. Like, to me, it has a lot of the same kind of feel, and they're just, I think they're trying to be different. So I agree with you. They mess up the flow. But I think it's completely intentional. They're just trying to be more of a,
yep.
You know, they're trying to set a mood, and you know, they do it really well. Like all of the Gorillaz catalog, it's like the White Stripes, right? Like the White Stripes, all the White Stripes albums, they sound like the White Stripes. They have that same message in every album, personality. Gorillaz are the same way. Like, they don't have one album that's like, is not dark and apocalyptic. You know, they really bought into their own personalities and their own traits. So,
right. All right. So, next question for you. What do you think about their live show?
There's not much to look at. they don't have a lot of live material that I could find. I found live music that sounded pretty awesome. I think it's really hard to pull this shit off live.
Well, because they're not real. They're animated.
Yeah, that and this is like, this is, you could tell that this is layers upon layers of music that it's hard to reproduce live.
Yeah, and considering the fact, it's just one dude. He's got to bring an entire orchestra sometimes behind him to get that same sound that you feel in the album. One exception, I was going to bring up the 2006 Grammys, and this is, you know, a little bit after this album came out. Mm-hmm. But they played the Grammys with Madonna. It was kind of a pairing. And this was the first use of that hologram where, you know, who was it? Tupac came back to life, and this hologram.
Stevie never died.
Technology.
He's in Cuba.
Thank you for confirming that. I've always felt that way inside, but now that you've said that, I know it's for real.
Yeah.
But yeah, back in the 2006 Grammys, they played with Madonna, and it was cool because they used these holograms to make these guys feel real. They were up on stage, and they were life-size, and they were playing their instruments and singing along and interacting with each other. But what really was my, like, jaw-dropping moment was that Madonna came on, and she's kind of singing alongside them. And she's walking in front of them, and she's kind of like playing and interacting with them. And then she walks around them. She walks behind them. Like, yeah. She'll walk in front of a guy and right behind it.
I still don't know how they did that.
It's magical. I mean, they did such a great job of giving these guys personality and making them feel real. But once Madonna starts interacting with them, it's like they're on stage together.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think they're better live. And there's a performance of them doing Stylo with Bobby Womack, rest in peace. Which is pretty cool. It was at Glastonbury, and the stage was, like, awesome, and the band sounded amazing. Except when Bobby Womack got his cue to sing, like, he just never sang. Like, it was just such a weird performance that, like, he sang some of it. When you hear the studio track, you know he sings more than what he sang live. So the cameraman at the festival, like, they edited it in a way where they just kept Bobby Womack out of the picture altogether. So, similar artist, we have Blur covered. I would throw back into this mix, and even a little bit of Moby.
Okay.
It kind of goes with it. Although Moby's, like, more repetitive and...
Yeah, but I kind of see what you did there. It's the same kind of musical style.
Yeah, electronic plus rock.
I'm going to throw in Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem.
Sure.
It's the band from the Muppets.
Oh, okay.
You know, the guy with the big gold tooth and top hat.
I do.
Only because it's another animated band.
Steve, those are puppets. I don't know if... Because
gorillas are cartoon. Are they cartoon? But the Muppets were puppets. So they're virtual bands.
Virtual band. Like it. I like it. Yeah, that's a good idea. That guy's cool. We played one show with the drummer once when we lost our original
drummer.
Yeah, no, this guy had an animal guy strapped to his bass drum, and we thought he was going to be cool, and he turned out to be a total dick. His name is Chris. I hope he's listening to this, because he was such a jerk. Like, he was so terrible. He only wanted to play, like, really terrible 70s, like, rock. Like, he hate, like, you know what it's like that I, like, this is a typical musician. I gave him the set list, like, 2 weeks before. He didn't have enough time to rehearse. And then he shows up to the gig, and he's just like, oh, your set list is terrible. I'm like,
well, that's what we're playing, so jump on it. So let's move on to this week in music history. Lots of interesting things happened this week. Let's start with a story back in 1955, which is, what, 60 years ago at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Elvis Presley played a show with Bill Haley and his Comets. Now, there isn't a whole lot of significance to this story, except that they appeared together at Brooklyn High School Auditorium in Cleveland.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Nothing is too special about that, except the fact that it's at Brooklyn High School, and I happen to be in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Cleveland, which is where you happen to be.
There's a Brooklyn here, Brooklyn, Ohio. I drive through it on my way to work all the time.
Don't you also have a Miami in Ohio?
There is. There's a University of Miami, Ohio.
You guys just steal all the best cities
from everywhere
else.
It's a big state,
else.
Man. They
So now that one's out of the way, let's move on. Let's go to 1976. And Led Zeppelin premiered the film The Song Remains the Same, which
awesome.
Is still a classic music movie.
Probably one of the best concert movies ever.
It was kind of a charity benefit that night. And they were able to raise $25,000 for the Save the Children Fund.
1977, looks like Ronnie Van Zant, Steve Gaines, and Casey Gaines from Lynyrd Skynyrd were all killed, along with manager Dean Kilpatrick, when their rented plane ran out of fuel and crashed into a densely wooded thicket in the middle of a swamp in Gillsburg, Mississippi. So it seriously injured the rest of the band and crew due to play Louisiana University that evening. That is tragic, and I know Lynyrd Skynyrd might not be everybody's favorite band, but
definitely not mine.
But, you know, I read some articles in the past in, like, Guitar World and stuff that talked about how Ronnie Van Zant used to make those guys practice, like, in a shed in the back of his, like, grandma's house. And they used to practice, like, a regular job, like, 8 hours a day.
serious about their craft.
They were huge Allman Brothers Band fans. Like, they religiously followed them on tour and thought they were, like, the best thing on earth, which explains why they, you know, are Lynyrd Skynyrd. But a tragic loss. When they play Freebird to this day, dude, their guitar section is insane. Like, that's why I don't like cover bands playing Freebird, because I've seen them do it on Austin City Limits. It is nuts watching three dudes play that guitar solo. It is like, it sounds like studio quality live. It is amazing. I'm a big Skynyrd fan for most of their songs. I just think it'd be cool to have people experience that the way I did.
Right on. And then the last item that we have in This Week in Music History happened 15 years ago in the year 2000. George Michael went to auction, and they were auctioning off the piano on which John Lennon wrote the song Imagine.
Wow.
And yeah, apparently this was a pretty hot ticket item. George Michael outbid Robbie Williams, thank God, and the Oasis Brothers, thank God, because the Oasis Brothers would have said, you know, in one of their fights, I'll take half the piano and you take half the piano, and they would have
I'll take the
apart.
Black keys and you take the white keys.
So, no, luckily George Michael got it all to himself. He paid £1.45 million for it. It was the Steinway piano. And when he got it, he said, I know that when my fingers touch the keys of that Steinway, I'll feel truly blessed. Parting with my money has never been much of a problem. Just ask my accountant. So he knew it's a sizable chunk of change to pay $1.5 million for a piano. But
well,
this
I guess it would be nice if I could buy the piano. That's a lot of money for a piano, but...
Yeah, but if there ever was a famous piano, this is the one. I mean, imagine...
paying that much for a piano.
Imagine the piano that made Imagine. All right, so let's move on to the next section, the sucky song of the day.
I don't even know how you found a sucky song by
actually,
this
no,
band.
I have to give props out to my good buddy Doug for bringing this. I was kind of torn between two songs, another one that we might save for another day. And he's like, listen, you got to check out this song by the Beatles. And at first, I was taken back. I'm like, how can a song by the best band ever...
Sacrilege.
Yeah, you can't say that they could have any sucky song. He's like, nah, dude, you got to hear this one song. It's called You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. And I said, all right, let me see. How come I've never heard of this song before? It's because it originally came out as a B-side to Let It Be in 1970. So this was towards the end of the Beatles' reign.
Yeah, their last album.
It's a sucky song for a lot of different reasons. They say it's kind of like a comedy or comic song, but it's not funny.
Because that's what the Beatles are all about, is making comedy songs.
Well, I mean, they do have a good sense of humor, but a sense of humor and coming up with a song just for the hell of it are two very different things. They're like, hey, we're going to punk everyone by coming up with such a sucky song because we're the Beatles.
I mean, The Fool on the Hill is a could maybe be seen as a comedic song. It's musical.
Right. They have like little jokes in there. And right, this song is not musical at all. It's kind of broken down into like three songs in one. So the first minute of the song... it actually has a pretty decent progression. You can tell it's definitely Beatles. It's very kind of bluesy. The problem here is that you have Paul singing the melody, and then you have John trying to harmonize with him, but he's just screaming it in the background. But then like a minute into the song, they completely switch it up. All of a sudden it has like this loungy feel, and it's almost kind of a sleazy feel in it. And the lyrics to the song are just repeated over and over and over again. It's the title of the song, You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. And they just repeat this over and over and over again over this sleazy lounge music. And it just makes it more horrible. And then like a minute later, they're like, all right, time to switch up the song again.
It's going nowhere. Let's just change it again.
Right. And this time they finally stop saying, you know my name, look up the number. Instead, it's disturbing almost. It's like, sounds like a homeless man just found a microphone in Abbey Road. And he's like... it's when, gross.
Steve,
it's,
you just did the best Chewbacca impersonation in any podcast ever.
Two of the words that come to mind with this third section is onomatopoeia and hernias. I don't need to go into detail there. It's a horrible song.
Even the best bands can sometimes just shit them out.
Yeah, it's a shame sometimes, but every once in a while, even the wrong words come out.
And that's our show. Remember to subscribe and share and
that's
like
right.
us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @BassTravelPod.
hey, good night to you and good night to our listeners out there. And be safe wherever you are. And remember, the light at the end of the tunnel may be you.
Hey, I like that, Steve. That's deep.